Okay, good morning everyone. Welcome to our talk on AerialOS. Please let me know if the mic starts to suffer, if I'm not holding it, if you can't hear me anymore anyway. So, this is Kasper. He's giving the second part of the presentation. I'm Koen. I'll be doing the first part. And we're maintainers of AerialOS and part of a set of contributors. So AerialOS is our operating system. It's a library operating system for secure, memory safe, low power, Internet of Things, and it's written in Rust. So some of the things you have seen from the previous talk might be familiar. So in this talk, I'll be giving a bit of context, showing a bit why we like Rust and the embedded ecosystem, show what AerialOS actually is all about, and then Kasper goes into getting started with AerialOS, doing some hello world to networking, and we'll wrap up. So first, we're here in the embedded dev room. So we're doing microcontrollers, limited processing power, slow power, low memory, and we have our single memory space. We do not have our MMU to do virtual memory. We might have an MPU to do some memory protection, but that's about it. Sorry. So our firmware, we're bare metal. We don't have an OS. That's what we have to provide here, I guess. We need to do threading, networking, heap allocations, maybe if you need that, but we need to do that manually, because we don't get that. We do not like allocations. We like our deterministic behavior, avoid the panics related to being out of memory on our low memory systems. And memory fragmentation becomes an issue. So we don't want allocations. That's where we get to Rust and the ecosystem. And with Rust, we can go on about memory safety. I think you all know about memory safety in Rust by now, so I will not go into that. I'll go into other parts of Rust and why we want Rust. Because Rust comes with a lot of other things. We get the crates, the shared code from crates.io repository, and it's well integrated into build system. One of the advantages we have here compared to, for example, C. The traits that we get, interfaces, so that we can actually have interoperability between the different crates. The NoSTD feature that's in the language, so that you can signal that you do not do allocations, you do not use the fancy types of the language, keeps things simple and well-suited for embedded. And there's the async part that was already shown in the previous presentation a bit, or actually quite a lot more than we'll probably be talking about it. But it provides asynchronous, cooperative, multitasking. So you can actually schedule multiple things on a single stack, minimal memory overhead. But all these features together we also like about Rust, because this actually fosters a lot of collaboration between different projects. So what do we get in practice from this ecosystem? Because we had the language features just now, but what we get, for example, is the embedded help traits. They provide a set of generic interfaces that can be used, like they can be implemented with peripherals, and it provides like a common interface into those peripherals, so it all looks the same from the user. For example, driver crates. You have your embedded help trait for I2C, you write a driver, you just assume that there's an embedded help implementation on the other side, and you can write your crates, assuming that if your driver is separate from the actual operating system. And then there's the asynchronous frameworks, such as Embassy. They implement these hardware abstractions that you need, and Embassy implements it for the STM32, the NRF, and the PyPico. I think by now a few more. And it provides us with a low memory async scheduler. Yeah, I can go on and on about this, but the message here is that the ecosystem of crates around embedded Rust, it's huge, it's growing, and it's great. So you start writing your firmware, and then at some point you need to find a crate for your hardware abstraction, you need the multitasking, you want networking, and you have to figure out what's out there and where do I get it. And maybe even you need something real time, you need actual interrupt-based threading. And it's possible to do this. You can all gather it up and do that, but it's curating that, integrating everything, it's time-consuming. So that's where we get with AerialOS. Because with AerialOS, we decided we can integrate this for you, make it easier. We have the embedded help crates. We pick the embassy executor, integrate small TCP with embassy.net, and integrate that for you so that you can use it and don't have to look around what's out there. So with AerialOS, we started with a scheduler, classic threading. It's a preemptive scheduler, priority-based, separate stacks, classic multi-threading. And we took the embassy executor, put that on top of a thread. And that runs inside a thread. It's the async scheduler that we've seen also from the previous presentation where you can do async programming. And in that way, we support both preemptive scheduling so that you can have your interrupt-based, your real-time, but also the low-memory asynchronous scheduling. So that gives us already quite a bit of an operating system together with those crates. And we want to build on top of that, also contribute back to the ecosystem, but also have higher-level abstractions. And one of those examples is what we have is a sensor abstraction. This means that you have your development board and there are sensors on it. And we want to make it that you don't have to worry about the exact type of temperature sensor on it. It's just a temperature sensor. So what we did with the sensor abstraction is you can enumerate the available sensors on your board, read out what is there in terms of sensors, and we provide a generic interface into these sensors and measurements so that you just can grab whatever sensor is out there and it should work. On the other side, we want to have a way to easily describe what is on your board. Provide a machine-readable description of the board, currently it's YAML. And this contains the information what is on the board, like the microcontroller that's out there, which peripherals are needed on that board, and the supported features of that board. Does it support a network interface? This is done in a format that you can read and the machine can read, and it's not Rust code itself. So hopefully that makes things easier. One thing we ran into was that Cargo is great in terms of build system, but Cargo will try to build things for you. You can just enable the features, and if it conflicts, Cargo at some point will tell you with a panic or an error message that it conflicts. And one of the things we want to have is that we can tell you before you start to compile, is this going to work on my board? Does my board support everything needed for this firmware to run? Or the other way around, if I want to run this example, which kind of boards can I use that are supported by AerialOS? So for that, we have our own build system that's wrapped around Cargo. It's Lace. It's a YAML-based declarative build configuration. You can select the required modules that you want. For example, I need networking for this one. It abstracts away the board specific things, which features need to be enabled for a specific board, which architecture is this board. Lace handles that for you. You just say, I want this board, I want networking, and Lace will steer the Cargo build system and try to build it for you. One other thing we did with Lace is abstract away the specific flash commands so that if you have your board, you just say, well, Lace build flash, and it will flash the board. And the thing is that with Lace, if you do this normally on with Cargo, you have to your cargo.toml, and you need to add all the specifics of your board. With Lace, we can abstract that away. So I think it's time for your part.
Yes,
you can demo all these nice features for us.
Thank you, Koen. So our demo is not as sophisticated as the one from the talk before, from Alexis. I'm going to show you how to get started, create a simple Blinky with Rust, then attach a sensor, show you how to add the I2C bus and the sensor driver, network it up, do some TCP sending, and then port it to another board, because that is something we can easily do. All right, and this is the hardware I did this demo on. It's a Nordic NF52DK, but it doesn't really matter which board we're using. All right, so first step, get a basic blinking LED on that board. We need to create a project from the template, define the LED pins, and then toggle that in a loop. And you will see code, but this is also what you don't see, right? So here you can see first step, we are also using Cargo Generate to generate our template. What you don't see here is anything board specific, right? With this, you generate the generic Arias application consisting of those three files. We have a main RS cargo terminal with no board specifics in here, and everything pretty basic. If you remember from the talk before, well, it's just an info log. And then we can run this now. We're using Lace to run this. Here's the first time I specify the board, the Nordic board. This would run unmodified on all the boards that RES supports, and you would get this Hello World output. Yeah. So now we have a basic template. And now we make it board specific because we define an LED pin. There you see in line 1, we can see we define like a LED pin. Line 5, we get an output. And then 7 to 10, a basic loop with a timer. If you want to use timers, we have to enable the timer feature on the Arias crate. And with that, we have a blinky. This is LED off, LED on, LED off. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Next step, we want to add a SPC temperature sensor. We are using SHT31, an SPC sensor, yes. So same, we need to somehow get the I2C bus pins right, and initialize the driver and print the sensor data. So we don't want to write the driver, so we find something on the internet. Unfortunately, this one was not on crate.io. Ghislaine, if you're here, please do the release, because he didn't put the release out with the async stuff. No problem with Cargo, we can just use the Git version, that works fine. So here we added, if you remember this, no, it's not here. There, line 7 has our LED defined. I now added here that we want to use the TWSPI0 I2C peripheral and the two pins we're using in line 8 and 9, pin 26 and 27. That's board-specific stuff. And with that in place, we initialize the I2C sensor. Here, like line 9 is just like it's a constructor. We want to do a bit of configuration, it's line 5 to 7. You can see it's something that we do in Ariel, like line 7, it's this constant function that figures out like a frequency from a range. Because you realize that these MCUs, they have like specific enumeration, like they don't, you can't do an arbitrary frequency. You have like a 400 kHz or 100 kHz, right? So usually the exact frequency doesn't really matter. And if you want to port your stuff across multiple boards, a range is fine. So this is what we're doing here. Ariel knows which frequency it can do on the specific board we're compiling for, and then chooses like the highest of those. This is like one of our portability tricks. So with I2C initialized, line 14, we initialize the driver. One line, very nice. Line 18, we get the measurement. Line 22, we print it using the logging, and then we loop again and do this. So if we execute this, you see output. I'm not as brave as Alexa, I don't do demo live here, but this is the output. You can see it was a bit colder in the office I built this demo. It's 19 degrees. Yeah. All right, let's move on. We want to network this up. So we need to do some TCP send, integrate in our main loop, and then fiddle with the build system to enable the networking. Yeah, I was laughing when I saw Alex's slide because he also did some TCP send. If you would have it side by side, it looks almost exactly the same, right? Even with the static IPv4 address hard-coded in, don't do that nowadays. What you don't see here is what he had to do. It's like the setting up of the network stack, whether the Wi-Fi and the connection, everything. Because here, for the Arial magic is in the line 3, where you get a network stack. And actually, the system and the build system know how to configure this. So for the board we're using, the NRFDK, the build system chose USB Ethernet networking and sets everything up in the network task. So for this simple application, really, we just take the network stack and do the TCP sendings. That is straightforward. Create a socket, connect, write everything, flush it, and be done with it. Yeah, and I worked around the buffer lifetime issues by just having it local to the function. So this reconnects every time, reuses the buffer. So with that report in, with that function, back to our main loop. Now instead of printing to the logging, we print it to a buffer, to a string. Here I'm using a heapless string, which gets allocated here on the stack, or in the future, but that's up to debate, right? Anyhow, there's a buffer now, and we call our report function in line 6. And with that, we send the stuff off. I have my favorite sophisticated server package on the other side. No, first build system, sorry. Yeah, so now we first have to integrate with Lace. So on the left side, you see, we want to use TCP, and we added for the write and for the string buffer, I used the embed IO async and heapless dependencies. That's ecosystem crates, very nice to reuse. And here first we have to add this network select. This is not in cargo because Lace needs to know if the board has network and it does know which kind of network it is. That's why we have this extra configuration in Lace. So now with the network select in place, this would not compile anymore on boards where we don't know if there's a network interface. Anyhow, with that in place, we can then get that data on. I omitted the whole host configuration of the USB Ethernet and bridging it, providing DHCP server to that, but you get the gist, like the node part is done with that. Okay, so now, what if I wanted to run this on a different hardware? Like, I'm gonna port this to the Raspberry Pico. The only thing that was actually board specific were the pinouts and the choice of I2C peripheral. So by changing those four lines, here I added like a whole new, using config, like a Rust conditional compilation, a new case for compilation, so it also works on the previous board, but if I want to port to the Pico, those are the four lines I would need to change. And with those four line changes, it works on this. Actually, I didn't follow through with it. It compiles and it probably runs. I didn't solder the things right. But the idea here is four lines and it runs on a completely different microcontroller. And that's it for getting started. What are we doing next? We're about to release version 03. Oh, yes. we're like fiddling with the changelog still. That adds integration of Bluetooth Low Energy using the Trouble Stack. We now have a native board with networking also coming in, I think, probably before the release, yes. And we have more YAML to describe the actual boards, move stuff out of the Rust code and into YAML because that's much easier to handle at scale. And after that, we're going to tackle secure software updates and better power management. Okay, so wrapping up, what Aerialis does is, like what you've seen before with the ESP stuff, we try to get all these little things that people have to care about to get started, do it once right, so you can actually concentrate on the business logic. So we integrate the embedded Rust ecosystem and make it easily approachable. And we think embedded makes embedded Rust really easy to get started. Yeah. So now you're thinking, why did they use IPv4 in 2026? And hopefully you're also thinking that this looks awesome and you want to try it. Thank you. So if you have questions, we probably meet outside. Right? Oh, do we have questions? Time for questions? We have time? Okay.
7 minutes.
Wow.
You have to answer the question. You have the mic.
Okay.
I can do it like this.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. And now the question. Year is 2026. Next year, CRA will take effect. Next year, the CRA, Cybersecurity Resilience Act, will take effect. And it requires that you should ship your software in secure configuration by default.
Yeah.
And my question is, all of the hardware you support actually supports MPU.
Yeah.
Why are you not using it?
Yeah, so there's two things. Why is the architecture not splitting the OS and the application like Toc does? That would be one way to use the MPU, have like a hard separation between, because this is a library S. So the actual application gets compiled and the network stack and everything is just a building block of one application. One application, one address space. This is how Rust works, right? It's like one application. What we don't do is we split the OS and the application because it's like, we like this architecture. We did it before. Like, for example, Talk does it, and...
Okay, you like it. And how will you... how will your security assessment look like that you will defend this, that it is secure? Because you target IoT specifically, so it's networked, it will potentially transfer some critical, sensitive information. Do you believe it is secure, actually?
Should we talk about this outside? Yeah, because it's very wide, right? But good question.
We knew the question was coming, right?
Yeah.
Do you plan to support device 3 at some point?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you have any plans for device 3 support for port descriptions?
Yeah, we're not doing device 3. Device 3 mixes like policy and configuration and stuff. What we're going to do is just parse the device 3 of Zephyr out using LLMs and convert it to our format, which we think is better. No device 3. Because device 3, it's great on Linux because it does runtime configuration, which we don't need, and for example, Zephyr doesn't use. And on the other hand, if we don't use the runtime configuration and the option to compile it to something readable at runtime, device 3 itself is not a great description format, right? So we don't want to use this data format. But these days, we actually tried, nowadays, it doesn't really matter what format the machine readable stuff is in, right? So seriously, we have our own stuff which is called the structured board description, which is super simple YAML saying which LED, which color, which pin, and we can easily pull that out of the Zephyr device trees or generate it from the data sheets using LLMs. So the actual whether it's device tree or not doesn't matter these days.
Any other question?
Do you implement sort of any memory protection, or say if you want to run unsafe code, you've done it wrong? Do you implement that for tasks or any sort of task restarting for panics or anything like that?
Yeah, similar question to this. So what we do is we have it in a branch. We're actually using the MPU to protect our stacks because we have multiple stacks. So we have a dead zone for stack protection, but it's a library, so it's not different processes. This is all one Rust thing, so we cannot easily have a thread in a different memory space or differently protected. That just doesn't work. What we could do is have a separately compiled thing, and this is completely different architecture. Talk does that. We don't do this. Just a different architecture. No.
Do you support Matter thread Zigbee or only
it's
Wi-Fi?
Not integrated yet. RS basically embassy, so the API is embassy. I'm pretty sure that the RS meta embassy example would run basically unmodified on RL, and we have it in the roadmap to just integrate and make an example out of this. So in theory, yes, of course, huh? But it's not integrated as well as it could be.
No more questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.